Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. Love in its many forms constitutes a wide range of different feelings, states, and attitudes. It can refer to an emotion of a strong attraction and personal attachment, or it can be a virtue representing human kindness, compassion, affection, and selfless concern for the good of another. Be it romantic, social, or familial, the research tells us that deep interpersonal connections and acts of service for others promote good physical and mental health and contribute greatly to our overall quality of life. What can we do to foster better friendships, improve our intimate partner connections, and increase our overall health and happiness? Joining us to answer these and other questions and to discuss the important role that love plays in determining the quality of our lives is a Line One favorite, Anchorage psychologist Dr. Jennifer Beath. Dr. Beath is a fellowship-trained specialist in the assessment and treatment of anxiety disorders and is a licensed psychologist in Anchorage. She currently maintains a clinical and consulting practice specializing in evidence-based treatment of anxiety and mood disorders. Dr. Beath completed a postdoctoral fellowship at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. In addition to her clinical practice, she serves as a professor of psychology at Alaska Pacific University and is a past president of the Alaska Psychological Association. Welcome to the show, Dr. Beath. I appreciate you coming back.
Thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. Today, we are encouraging listeners to call in and share stories or experiences from your own lives that make you feel closer and more connected to those around you. How do you show love in your relationships? What are some things that make you feel loved or actions others might take that demonstrate that you are appreciated and cared about? If you have something that you would like to contribute to today's conversation, please don't hesitate to call in or email. As always, you can reach us in one of three ways. You can call us locally at 550-8433, or if you're outside of Anchorage, you can reach us on our toll-free number. That's 1-888-353-5752, and the last way to reach us is to email your comments to line1@alaskapublic.org. If this is your first time emailing us, you have to spell out line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at alaskapublic.org. All right. I guess love means a lot of different things to different people. So for the purpose of today's program, let's kind of set the stage for our conversation about love. And the idea, I guess we can start with the idea that love is not just a word. It's a verb. It can be an action and not just a romantic feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is that romantic love, right? There's love the feeling, there's love the emotion. But then we have loving action, so which is loving behavior. And what I want to introduce this hour is that loving action can be a behavioral choice. Loving behavior, or what Buddhists might call, you know, loving kindness, right? We can choose to practice this. It doesn't have to be limited to love with our mate or our family. We can choose to operate from a loving stance. So that might be defined as, you know, this ongoing process of finding connection with and valuing the world. So if we approach love in this way, it's always available to us. So loving action, it's considered a virtue. It's highly valued across cultures. It's highly correlated with being happier, feeling more connected, and feeling more positive emotion overall.
Okay, you mentioned love is a virtue. So if it's a virtue, what does that mean? Let's sort of break that down a little bit more.
So we would definitely think of loving action as a virtue, as virtuous behavior, because we're choosing it no matter what difficulty we're faced with. So it's about what we're giving, not what we're receiving. So the emphasis is not on how you make me feel. It's on what I'm willing to do, what I'm willing to give. So I talk about it perhaps like it might sound like I'm suggesting it's easy. It's really difficult, of course, especially in real time, right? Because the idea is that we're willing to remain committed to loving behavior in the face of sometimes ugly behavior, right? That's, you know, negative feedback, negative behavior, for sure. So the choice that we have that I want to introduce is this idea of, you know, I'm willing to behave with a loving stance in this interaction, right now between me and my kid or me and my mate. So I'm willing to express loving behavior in the service of my relationships. So I'm willing to behave on purpose in a more loving, open, generous, compassionate way. You get to decide in the service of my relationships. So I love talking about things in terms of behavior because then it becomes something we can practice and gain skill with. Yeah.
I was going to say, we all know that, we get better at anything. We master anything if we practice.
That's
repetition,
right.
Golf shots.
That's right.
Free throws. I use sports analogies, but I mean, those guys practice over
that's
and
right.
over.
You'd get
and
as
over.
Good as you could get, right? Mm-hmm. As you're biologically capable of getting, right? And so the same is true with emotional skills.
They say mastery takes 10,000 hours. So you're saying you practice 10,000 hours of loving acts and you become a master of love?
Well, I think it's helpful to think of this as a skill in development, right? We can actively work to get better at this. So remember, it's not about what we feel, it's about what we do. So we don't have to wait. That's the beauty. We don't have to wait to feel loving or for the right mood to strike us, right? We can practice and act more now on our own as a behavioral choice. So the fact that you can act with love, even if you don't feel love in the moment, it's hugely empowering.
Okay, I guess we're going to go ahead and we'll go to our first phone call. Earlier, we have Nicole. You're on line one with Dr. Beath. Go ahead.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Hey, I just want to give a shout out to my dear husband. He is the most patient, kind, loving man. I'm on the spectrum. And so for me, love is definitely visible in very different and unique ways. And he's always been a patient, kind, dear addition to my life. He's the rock in the sometimes tumultuous sea. And it's just been a wonderful, unique ride for us. And I appreciate the love and the patience he shows in me and in my unique ways of showing my love.
Nice. Wonderful. So you feel loved. You want to express your love by expressing gratitude right now in this moment, right?
I do. Yep, express my gratitude.
And that makes you feel more connected to your very own life, right?
It does. Yes, it does.
Wonderful.
That's a little different for us on the spectrum. So for people who are neurotypical, it's sometimes a little difficult. And he's been always patient and kind and understands my quirks.
Beautiful.
All right, Nicole, thank you for the call. The neurotypical word, I don't know that any of us are really neurotypical. I like to think we're all on some sort of spectrum. So thank you, Nicole, for expressing that gratitude and that appreciation. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll go ahead since we have one more caller who's been waiting for a few minutes. Lindsay, you're on line one with Dr. Beath. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Beef. I just wanted to share my my experience. I got into a local cat rescue out here in Wasilla called Clear Creek Cat Rescue, and it has been quite the journey. And I've learned love in a lot of different ways rather than dealing with humans. It's a lot different dealing with animals. But it's been extremely rewarding for me. And you just talked with Nicole about the connection in her own life, and that has been actually, like, you summed it up. Like, I was like, well, she kind of just, like, read my mind because the connection in my life has been, like, extreme. I've been doing it for 7 years, and now I can't imagine my life without it. And it has its struggles, but through those struggles, I learned so much about myself, and I learned so much about them, obviously. But through that, it's amazing the gratitude that I have and how I look at life differently when I see life being abused and abandoned and neglected, and then I get to rehabilitate it and recreate it and then, like, teach that animal to purr again and then put it in a home and, you know, learn to set it free. And I mean, there's so much that comes from that, and I'm sure you can understand that. But I also wanted to encourage people to do something like that, to give back to their community. Obviously, I love animals, but when you give back to your community, you become more grateful, and in that, you become more happy, and then you experience all the love and everything else that comes with it too.
Thank you so much, first of all, for the work you do in the service of animals, in that way. What you're exactly describing is what I'm also talking about, which is this loving stance, which, you know, is defined as kind of this ongoing process of finding connection with and valuing the world. So it doesn't just have to be limited to humans, right? In fact, don't limit it to humans, right? It's a relationship and an approach we have towards our very own life. Good for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Lindsay. I appreciate the call. On a side note, that just made me think of something, and I've experienced in my own practice and working with people who've suffered some severe trauma, especially prolonged complex trauma in childhood, that there is an attachment and a connection with animals that is really, really deep in a lot of ways, and it seems different to me. I don't know. I haven't done a lot of research on this to find out if there's actually any correlation, but... do you have any thoughts on why that might be, on why people might connect to animals?
Well, I don't personally know of that correlation, but it might be anecdotal or, you know, circumstantial totally in someone's life. It could be that we get, you know, great companionship and that unconditional love, if we call it that, you know, loyalty from animals in particular, but... What I love about it is what the last caller was kind of referencing to, is that we all have this opportunity to serve and kind of step outside of our own jazz and contribute to something else, including the service of animals. So we'll talk more about that, the value of kind of contribution later.
Of giving back and of connecting with through service and the value of that. My own theory is, and just developing this from my own practice, is that, as you mentioned, that unconditional, non-judgmental, they're not going to hurt you. The bumper sticker, God let me be the man my dog thinks I am, sort of jumps into my head. But there's just something so pure about that attachment and that connection with animals that runs deep and I think is really, really safe for a lot of folks. Okay, so we'll move along. One of the things that we want to talk about today, and we've already started talking about it, is this idea of social connectedness and why relationships and why connection is so important for health outcomes. I mean, what does the research indicate as far as connection and health, mental health, and overall wellness?
Yeah, so we are pack animals. We high-quality social relationships are one of, if not the most, important health determinant that we have. So that's not my opinion. That's the state of the science right now. So there's a really important article that was published just within this last year. It's called Advancing Social Connection as a Public Health Priority in the United States. We can put a link up on the website if people are interested in it, but it's one of the most important articles I've read in the length of my career. I'm just going to read just a little bit, just a very brief amount of this article, because it says, kind of summarizes the science better than I can. So here's what, it's really a radical kind of, not so much of the what it says, but how it's stated. So a robust body of scientific evidence has indicated that being embedded in high-quality close relationships and feeling socially connected to the people in one's life is associated with a decreased risk of all-cause mortality, as well as a range of disease morbidities. Broad-based epidemiological studies have provided clear and compelling evidence that social relationship status and functioning predicts an array of important health outcomes. Humans need others to survive. Regardless of one's sex, country, culture, origin, age, economic background, social connection is crucial to human development, health, and survival. So the evidence supporting this contention is unequivocal. So if you read academic articles, and I hope you don't, save yourself, you will be profoundly startled by the intensity of this language. This doesn't happen very much, but it's because the evidence is so strong here. So this article goes on to talk about how, you know, first of all, how important it is, but then, unfortunately, how social connection is something that the majority of the U.S. population lacks, which is putting us at greater risk. So, for example, a quarter of the U.S. population lives alone. Over half is unmarried. among married couples, 3 in 10 relationships meet criteria to be what's called severely discordant. Okay, so that's challenging, disconnected, hostile, perhaps. So now the World Health Organization now lists social support as a determinant of health. The United Kingdom, they have now a minister of health that has established loneliness as a health priority. It's incredible that we think about this. Is this new to you, Prentice? Because it's blowing my socks off.
Well, I mean, it's not new in the sense that we know. I mean, you look back at the Harvard study that they did. I don't know the details on that, but it started back in the early 1900s and followed men all the way through adulthood. I think it just wrapped up. It had three folks who led this study, and the single most important factor in determining happiness, it was a study on happiness that I think you and I talked about at one point in a show a while ago, but was their level of connectedness with friends and family, their social connections and their love interests. So that was the single most determinant of happiness. So this follows right along with it. What is new is this idea that it is a now on our radar as a public health concern, and that organizations and nations are actually getting involved and are worried about the lack of connection that folks are growing up with and experiencing in today's sort of mobile and fragmented society.
Absolutely. So this article goes on to state that social disconnection is the defining feature of contemporary American life. And recent analyses have suggested that widespread smartphone use has diminished the quality of interpersonal exchanges, so much so that the problem of, quote, being alone together has emerged as a meaningful cultural reference. This is new.
This is all new since the iPhone came out in 2007, right? And this is something that is entering our consciousness at a whole new level. We'll get back to that in just a second. But if you're just tuning into the program, my guest today is Anchorage clinical psychologist Dr. Jennifer Beath. Today we are discussing the important role that love plays in promoting health and happiness. Today we're inviting our listeners to call in with experiences or stories from your own lives that make you feel closer and more connected in your relationships. If you'd like to participate in today's program, you can call us in three ways. You can reach us locally at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or you can reach us toll-free from anywhere outside of Anchorage you might be listening. That's at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, before that little moment, we were discussing smartphones and technology, and it seems like that goes along with something that I've noticed, that there is a new emphasis in schools on social-emotional learning. And there are programs that are set up in the school district that focus on social-emotional development and connectedness and community service work and things like that. Are we having to sort of take over and educate that in a way for something that developmentally in the past may have just sort of come playing in the neighborhoods and going out and connecting with friends? I mean, we're getting more and more isolated, and that's one of the big things I see in my office is kids are isolating, and oftentimes it's a really easy way to get I call it a false connection. The kids get mad at me. The young people get mad at me when I say, well, is that a real connection? They're like, absolutely. These are my friends.
Sure.
So you're talking about alone. What was the term you used?
Social connectedness.
Connectedness. I forget what you said, but it was something about being alone while connected.
I'm sorry. This term of being alone together.
Yes.
So have you heard of that cultural reference?
Uh-huh.
This idea of, you know, we're going to sit maybe together, perhaps on our couch or wherever, but instead of engaging and connecting, looking in each other's eyes, asking questions back and forth, etc., we're having our own experience. We're scrolling. We're checking our Facebook feed. We're tuning into what other people are doing. So just the whole premise of that So I'm not judging that behavior, but if you just look at how that functions, right, the very idea, of course, is that what's on the phone or the virtual connection there is somehow more important than the person next to you, right? It takes priority.
Dr. Delaney Rustin, who made a film called Screenagers, which mm-hmm. we've done a program on and is being shown in many of the schools right now, there's a scene in there where all these young people are sitting around in the halls at school, and they're all on their phones, and the only interaction they have is about what's on the phone. They're talking about that. They're not talking about their own feelings, their own experiences. And so it's sort of a filter through which they connect almost artificially. So it seems like a dangerous habit, and I don't want to understate it or overstate it, but it does seem like something that we don't really know what's going to happen in the next 20, 30 years.
Here's what we do know so far, and this kind of leads me into this monitoring the future survey. But first, let me just say this. The issue with social media, with our phones, our preoccupation with our phones, right? The main consequence is social, because it divides our attention. Yeah. So, and love, as long as we're talking about that today, might be thought of as attention, right? It might be thought of as paying close attention. So inattention is a big fat problem psychologically. So we see there's myriad studies that, show that inattention yields decreased productivity, decreased social connection, decreased psychological well-being. It diminishes the quality of our interactions within relationships. So the irony of social media, all my friends, all my followers, right, is that it doesn't make people feel more connected. In fact, it makes people feel more separate, more divided, and lonelier, at least according to the data.
All right, so that leads us into the monitoring the future survey study. Can you explain to us what that is and what that tells us?
Completely. So this is it's called the Monitoring the Future Survey. It's funded by the National Institute of Drug Abuse. It's designed to be nationally representative. It's where they've asked 12th graders over 1,000 questions every year since 1975. So that's 40 years of data, right? Mm-hmm. And then in 1991, 25-ish years ago, whatever, they started querying 8th and 10th graders as well. So the survey asked teens how happy they are and then how they spend their time. So looking at non-screen style activities, right? So such as in-person social connection. And then in recent years, with the ubiquitousness of smartphone use, they started to measure screen activity, so social media activity, texting, internet browsing. And so the results couldn't be clearer. So here's what they are. Teens who spend more time on screen activities are more likely to be unhappy. Those who spend more time on non-screen, real-life activities, are more likely to be happy. There wasn't a single exception. All screen activities are linked to less happiness, and all non-screen activities are linked to more happiness. It goes further. So those who visit social networking sites every day but see their friends in person less frequently are more likely to agree with the statements of a lot of times I feel lonely. I often feel left out of things. I often wish I had more good friends. So, this is powerful when we think about how we spend our time. So, Facebook did their own studies, and the outcome was the same, essentially this. It's greater Facebook use predicts a decline in well-being. So it's real bad with the passive social media user. So this is the person that doesn't post, let's say. They don't actively, engage or respond to other people. They're more passive, so they scroll. These are folks that scroll the feed, right? So they look at the pictures, but they don't engage. So passive social media users have the highest rates of depression and loneliness. And you can kind of see why, or perhaps it's because it spins us into this evaluative place, right? This kind of social envy, social comparison. They even have an acronym for this, FOMO, fear of missing out. Right?
Right.
So this kind of evaluative, oh, what are other people doing? Oh, gosh, they're doing a kitchen remodel. Gosh, I couldn't figure that out. Oh, right? We're evaluating and comparing ourselves up against other people. So humans don't do our best coming from this evaluative social comparison place. It's just way too much self-focus. So active social media users, they did a bit better. So the active social media users, this is Facebook studies. You know, these are the people that post and engage. So Judy, happy birthday, right? You know, the occasion of your birthday reminds me of how we stayed up all night and read poetry to one another, right? So these people do a little bit better in terms of the depression and loneliness. And you can see why, perhaps, because it better mimics real life engagement.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I've read recently about social media and Facebook in particular. It's interesting that Facebook did these studies and confirmed those reports. But, I mean, what people put on Facebook or Instagram, this is a big one for kids, Snapchat, Instagram, they look at other people's lives and they look so fabulous and they
That's
look
right.
so interesting and they're bungee jumping and they're going off and doing things. But I think what people don't get exposed to is the struggles that other people have. And there's not an exchange of both the positive and the negative. And as you said, you get this envy and this idea. I saw one study that showed that people who post all these amazing things about their spouses and their love and, you know, just overdo
sure.
it, actually have much higher divorce rates than folks who kind of don't post that stuff.
Interesting.
So it's sort of, yeah, this false narrative about what people's lives are and how fabulous they are.
Well, it's a curated reality for sure, right? So it's, you know, we don't post usually our self-doubt and our self-criticism. And in fact, I'd encourage people probably not to, right? We
right.
might have some problems with that. But I guess really, you know, what I'd like to take out of this literature is more self-critical or critical thinking style examination of how we use social media, how we use technology, period. Is it judicious? Is it prudent? Does it make sense? Is it a tool that we're using, or is it something that it's the last thing we check at night and it's the first thing we check in the morning and it's, you know, sleeps under our pillow and, you know, we begin to use almost the language of addiction with it. Oh, I know I shouldn't, but I just can't help myself, you know, and those types of things. I think we're entering into some problems with this.
It's interesting that you bring up addiction, because that was in my head, the study of the rats in isolation and how mm-hmm. they use heroin water to the point of death when they are in isolation. But when they are put in the rat park with babies and other rats, they enjoy sex and community and toys to play mm-hmm. with. There is almost zero mortality from the heroin water.
Because we're getting good feeling from our relationships.
The study indicates that addiction is about connection. And that is, you know, connecting to something, being it gambling, being it social media, video games, kind of goes on and on. The ways that which we express addictive behavior and attach to things that are sometimes unhealthy. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about. Okay, we have a call coming in, but I want to go ahead and take our mid-break return before we get into the call, because I don't want to rush that. So we're at the halfway point in our show. We're going to go ahead and take just a short 30-second break. If you have a comment or a question or a story about how love has impacted your life, please don't hesitate to call in or email. Our local phone number is 550-8433. If you're outside of Anchorage, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is to email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll return to our conversation with psychologist Dr. Jennifer Beath. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning into the program, my guest today is Anchorage clinical psychologist, Dr. Jennifer Beath. And we are discussing the important role that love plays in promoting overall health and happiness. Today, we're inviting you to call in with experiences or stories from your own lives that make you feel closer and more connected in your relationships. Our local phone number is 550-8433, or you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to get on the air with us is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. And if you do that here in the next 15 minutes or so, we'll be able to read your question on the air. If you missed the first part of today's conversation, you can catch the rebroadcast of Line 1 tonight at 8 o'clock. Or you can listen to it on our podcast and find it along with all of our past programs in our library of archive shows. Just go to alaskapublic.org homepage, click on the radio tab, and scroll down to Line 1. And there you'll find all of Dr. Woodard's and my past shows. Please remember, if you're listening to us tonight, you'll be hearing a tape recording, and we won't be able to accept phone calls. Okay, right before the break, we had a call, and I want to go ahead and go to Chris, who has something to say in defense, I think, of social media. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, kind of. I don't know how many teenagers you guys had, but, you know, I watched them over the years sitting there, and I definitely do not like texting, but I watched them communicate while sitting in the same room to one another. And as opposed to chatting, you know, they're chatting, but they're doing it with their thumbs, which is a little different. And I think I'm not so sure that this isn't just a fad that will pass in decades to come. You know, people will look back on that and go, oh, that was stupid, you know, and just move on. And, you know, because obviously communicating, you know, dialing seven numbers on your phone, way easier. And I tell these kids that all the time. Now, the other thing I wanted to bring up was the thing about, you talked about the emotional mental states and bringing those through. And I think that a couple of things that are missing from that are also the physical, not just the emotional, social, but the physical and spiritual parts of a human being. You know, even if you're an atheist, there are still some spiritual things. You know, you go out to the woods and you find an emotional, right, spiritual kind of feeling that you get out there. And I think everybody shares that. And I think that we don't do that enough when we're communicating with one another. We don't talk about that part of our natures. You know, we tend to neglect the physical, which, by the way, when you're physical, it proves that you're happier. You know, we've shown that we can be happier while doing exercise. I think that would go a long way to improving the state of people's, behavior and how they feel.
That spiritual element that you're talking about, psychologists study that with a term we call awe. So it's the quality of awe and wonder, right? And that can be defined as a spiritual term, perhaps. There's lots of actual studies on awe and wonder. It's cool. A lot of it comes out of UC Berkeley, if people are interested. And then you mentioned something important about, you know, exercise as well. So, you know, what does it mean when our whole social world doesn't require us to get off of our bed, right? I mean, it's all just right here on our phone, right? There's no need to get a driver's license and, you know, sneak out of the house to meet my girlfriend or boyfriend, right? No need when my social world is here. So here's one outcome that we've seen from this radical change in how we live is obesity. So teens are 10 times more obese than they were 10 years ago. Excuse me, 40 years ago. So there's lots of studies tracking that. Of course, we see also a greater incidence of sleep disorders, sleep problems, because we're up all night on our phone. We're not sleeping well. We're sleeping less. We see this with adults, too. We see, you know, massive influx of sleep problems now.
Yeah, I do not want to just blame the kids, because adults are certainly in this as well. So, Chris, those are some great points. I appreciate your call. All right, he's gone. He brought up some interesting things that triggered for me. I mean, if you're communicating with somebody pushing letters, there's no eye contact. And one of the most interesting studies I saw on the brain is how eye contact, when you make eye contact with another human being, there's a part of the brain that lights up that is involved with the pleasure centers, and there's this connection. And when you look at a video even of another person, a video conference, and I saw on Screenagers, one of this business guy said that there's a reason that the video conference will never replace the meeting as a place to close deals, because you can't build trust. You don't have this sense of connectedness, as he points out, over a video conference, even if you see face to face. There seems to be something that's missing that is sort of elemental in our biology and our evolution that involves connecting with other people. And you mentioned it's necessary for our survival. As individuals, we are weak. As individuals, we are a very fragile being, and a lot of things can take us out. But collectively, as a whole, with a village, with a community, a group of people, we can do more, and we are much safer. So that sort of takes us into our next area. And let's talk a little bit about the idea of giving and receiving love, or giving service. And that's one of the things that you keep going back to. So can you talk a little bit about giving versus getting?
Yeah, absolutely. Winston Churchill said, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. So we study this in terms of the value of contribution. Okay, so that's loving action we can take on purpose. Right? A life worth living is built. It doesn't just arrive. So I think a lot of us, perhaps unconsciously think of, we secretly hope that people are just going to, show up for us and celebrate us, right? And I hope that happens. But we do better by showing up in other people's lives and celebrating them. So it's not an immediate reward, what I'm talking about here, but giving careful attention to other people, being a better listener, practicing tenderness, practicing patience. These are behavioral choices that are always available to us. Contribution in our relationships is less empty, it's less hollow, and it's way more sustainable than receiving, right? So Martin Luther King has a statement that I love. He says, everyone has capacity for greatness because everyone can serve. This just feels like liberation to me, right? So I don't have to circle the drain of me and my self-doubt and my self-focus, right? I can activate my behavior in the service of the relationship, because investing in relationships is important.
Why might, from an evolutionary perspective, giving or service to others or helping out your fellow man, why might that be something that is selected for or considered advantageous? Because if something is not advantageous, it gets eliminated, right? If it's not adaptive. So how is giving, how is that adaptive? Why might that be something that we need as humans to strengthen and to do? Sort of instinctual.
It's survival, right? I mean, I would think. But there's somebody better than me to talk about that component. But psychologically, because the rewards are clear, right? We feel more connected through service. We feel like our life has greater meaning. And here's the best part: it's always available to us. We don't have to wait for anything. We don't have to wait for people to show up and write us a love letter. We can instead behave in the service of building our life. It all depends on what type of life we want to live and build.
It seems like when you do for others, you build a connection and you develop trust and a sense of community. And again, it goes back to the collectiveness and the tribe. I mean, we get close to our family, we get close to our village, and now we're in cities of millions and millions of people and living more and more in isolation and in boxes. So I guess let's get back to what can people do? What can people do as far as everyday things or what are acts that we can take? Let's put some, ideas in folks' heads, some real action stuff.
Cool. There's two things I want to talk about today with you. Number one is giving the gift of your full attention on purpose. And number two is matching joy for joy. So these are two things that people, you can evaluate for yourself, but you're probably already good at. You probably already know how to do because you did it when you were courting, right? If you've ever had a romantic relationship. So giving the gift of your full attention. Okay, so let's do a little exercise, right? So one of the greatest gifts you can give anybody, right, is the gift of your full attention. Have you ever had anybody really pay close attention to you, Prentice?
I'm doing it with you right now. And I try to do that in my practice.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's you giving it. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
But what about receiving it? Have you ever had someone really pay close attention to you, listen closely?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was probably intoxicating, wasn't it? Or a valuable experience, I would imagine. Usually is.
Safe, comforting, warm. I mean, it's trusting. It feels good.
It depends on what type of relationship we're talking about, but it can be very connective, right? It can even be an erotic experience in a romantic relationship, right? Either way, it's a gift we're giving to someone else. We're doing it on purpose in this example. It's a gift of your full attention. So let's do a little exercise, okay? So, Prentice, you and me, okay?
All right.
So think of somebody you greatly admire, right? So it can be a favorite author, a sports person, you know, movie star, it doesn't matter, okay? You got them in your mind?
Yeah.
So suppose they walk into a room, okay? Would you give them your full attention?
I would hope so, but it might depend on what's going on.
No. This is
sure.
Someone you really admire, right? It'd be like electric, probably, right? You'd be like, oh my gosh, this person's here. I can't believe it, right?
Uh-huh.
You'd probably drink them in, probably, right? So you would absorb, probably notice and pay attention to everything about them, their eyes, their tone of voice, what they wore, what they did, right? So now let's say that they talk to you, just because, or at some, you know, you're at a party or something together, they talk to you.
If Esther Perel walked in,
there we go.
I would give her my full attention.
Okay, thank you. You probably wouldn't be checking your Facebook feed, right?
Nope.
Okay, so now let's say Esther Perel talks to you. You, out of all the people, she talks to you. So you would be genuinely curious about what she had to say, wouldn't you? Right?
Fascinated,
her thoughts and feelings, right? Would you be checking your text messages?
I wouldn't be thinking about anything else.
Sure. Okay, so now you're talking to her, right? So now you're in the position to maybe notice. Maybe she has some imperfections, maybe, right? Maybe she has some quirks or some kind of unusual aspects, yeah? So would you judge her harshly, right? Or would you judge these imperfections with generosity?
I would probably be pretty forgiving.
You might even cherish it,
yeah.
Right? You've kind of heard language like that before of like, oh, you know, it's just so darling, so cute,
quirk.
Right?
You know,
a quirk, yeah. Right? We might even cherish her imperfections in that way. So now you're talking to her, and let's say she brings up something really important to her, okay, something she's struggling with, some pain she has. Would you listen closely?
Absolutely.
Right? So you'd probably say, tell me more. Right? You'd probably want to know more. You'd ask more curious questions, right? Would you be paying half attention? Right? Probably not.
I'd be invested, yeah.
So now, what if you didn't agree with what she was saying? She starts to say something that you don't agree with, okay? You might ask, would you ask some questions, right? To kind of better understand her point
mm-hmm.
of view? You'd be a little bit more open, more flexible, perhaps?
Yeah.
You'd be willing, wouldn't you? Right?
Absolutely.
So in this scenario, you're paying full attention, you're curious, you're psychologically flexible, and you're open to the experience. So why don't we give this to our beloved? Why don't we give this gift to the people that are actually in our lives, our close friends, our mate, our spouse, etc., right? So I'll tell you when you were good at this, right? This is when you were courting, right?
Yeah.
So when you're first dating somebody, you're real good at this. You wanted to pay loving attention, so you did, right? You didn't call it work, so it wasn't. Did you feel close and connected then? I mean, people can think of this in their own lives. So, you know, folks might say at this point, well, okay, the novelty's worn off in my long marriage or my relationship, right? So why bother giving my full attention? It's much easier to kind of give half attention and kind of defend my own point of view, depending on what we're talking about, right? And my premise is this, is that by giving your full attention, it's the antidote to apathy and disconnection. Mm. Right. So if we don't make the conscious effort to be curious and open and attentive in our relationships, we're going to grow increasingly dissatisfied and disconnected with our life and within our relationships. So try it for yourself, listeners. Right. Give the gift of your full attention to your mate, your friends, your dog. I'm serious. Your kids, your coworkers. And watch these relationships kind of flower, open up, watch them change, soften perhaps.
All right. Let's go ahead and go to the phone since we're sort of getting shorter on time. Go ahead. You're on the air with, I don't see it. Sid. You're on the air with Dr. Beath. Sorry.
Hi. Well, your discussion reminded me of a situation that came up in Japan a few years ago. A boy, his only life was playing video games, and for some reason or other, he encountered or saw a girl in a takeout restaurant where you get your sandwiches, and he wanted to meet her, and he didn't know how, so he went online, and he got 2 million people giving him advice. They ultimately made a movie about it, starring the original participants, and but the movie highlighted how alienated these children were, and I think the Japanese may be ahead of us in this problem because they were totally consumed in Tokyo with the electronic world, and they didn't know how to function in the real world. They literally didn't know how to have an ice cream soda or something. Let's go to a movie. And I think that maybe they got into this problem before we did, so that might be a line of investigation to think about.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Did they start it before us, and have they started to address that issue before us as well? So thanks for the call, Sid. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea to think about is and we've talked a lot about this, what are the consequences of this lack of connection, and do we lose those skills if we don't practice them? And I say yes. I mean, if the oxytocin wears off after you first, it's easy when you're first in love to do that. But how do we sustain that, I guess? How do we, and that's where you start to talk about intentionality and acting on purpose, right?
Absolutely. So investing in relationships on purpose, because relationships are important, not only for our well-being, but our physical health. So that might require, in some cases, kind of an active investment in staying open, curious, and attentive, asking more questions, tell me more, becoming a better listener. I mean, I think the art of listening or being a good listener, totally undervalued.
Yeah.
Right? Do you know a good listener? Write that person a thank you card, because that's a monster skill. What a cool thing.
Yeah, I tell folks who have some social anxiety stuff that one of the best ways to connect with people is to ask them questions about themselves and to get them engaged in a conversation and then pay close attention and
that's
ask
right.
more questions.
Really
and
listen
up.
To the answers. Tell me more. That type of stance. Absolutely.
All right, if you're just tuning in, my guest today is Anchorage clinical psychologist Dr. Jennifer Beath. We are discussing the important role love plays in promoting overall health and happiness. And we're inviting callers to reach out with their experiences or stories from their own lives that make you feel closer and more connected in your relationships. We got about 5 minutes left where we can take phone calls. So if you have one, please go ahead and hurry up and call us you can reach us locally at 550-8433 or toll free at 1-888-353-5752, or you can email something in the next few minutes to line1@alaskapublic.org, and I'll try to read it on the air. We'll go to another caller. Rachel, you're on line one with Dr. Beath. Go ahead.
Hi, I was reading an article last night at Barnes & Noble about addiction, And as people get more and more involved with their addiction, then they're drawn away from their family and friends and get more into alone activities. And so it was talking about a fragment of oxytocin that helped people in addiction get back to engaging in community. It's new and it really hasn't been tested, but it was encouraging studies on this fragment. And one of the things it said was because they're isolating themselves and not engaging in social interaction, that feeds the addiction. And this fragment of oxytocin helped them engage. And so it was also asking a question at the end of the article of, okay, if could it be used as an inoculation against addiction? But, of course, has not been tested enough.
All right, Rachel, that's a good question. I have a couple of thoughts about it. One of the primary steps in recovery from addiction is reconnecting, because addiction lives in isolation. It thrives, it blooms, it grows in isolation. And, one of the first things that you do when you go to any sort of treatment program or recovery program is somebody says, hey, you got to do some service work. Come make coffee, make some phone calls, stock the flyers. So that's one of the first things they do is service for others, giving back to a community and creating a sense of family. And that's one of the things that a lot of folks believe it really contributes to the growth of folks in AA or in a recovery program, is that sense of community, finding a tribe, finding a place where you feel comfortable and you belong. So I appreciate the phone call. That's a great point. It speaks well to, it speaks exactly to what I spoke about earlier with addiction being a desire to connect to something, right? And so I appreciate the thought, and thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
All right, one last concept that I wanted you to talk about, Dr. Beath, real briefly, is this idea of matching joy for joy. What do you mean by that? I guess we could take a guess, but what are your thoughts?
Sure. So this is a loving action we can do on purpose. We don't have to wait. We can do this in the service of our relationship. So matching joy for joy. So here's the premise, and you can apply it in different ways. So when your mate comes to you with joy, they're excited about something, right? They love some idea. They're passionate about something. Try to match that energy, even if you don't feel it, okay? So you don't have to love it in the same way, right? You might not love it at all, right? But you choose to match their joy in the service of the relationship, because investing in relationships is important, right? So let's make this even bigger. So if something good happens to your friends, celebrate it, right? Throw yourself into it with vigor and heart, right? Go out of your way to notice and celebrate other people. So if your office mate, right, does something well, notice it and go out of your way to pay a compliment, right? Catch people doing their best and notice it, talk about it, make it bigger. Okay, so if your child or your dog comes to you with joy, right, your dog bounding towards you with joy, this happens, ears flapping back, right, respond with joy and see how this elevates you. See what this does to your relationships. Try this. Don't just take my word for it, right? And of course, the opposite is true as well, right? So likewise, if someone's hurting, respond with tenderness. It's a loving act you can choose on purpose.
It almost seems like you're mirroring, right? That you're matching it. That's what you talk about, matching
joy for
joy.
It's a loving action, right? So I'm not, it kind of maybe sounds like I'm suggesting playing a part, right?
Faking it.
I'm not so much. I'm saying you're choosing to be excited for somebody because something, they're excited about something, right? Why? Because you're investing in that relationship, and relationships are important. You'll feel closer and more connected. I promise. Try it.
And that's the sort of the whole premise of what we're talking about is connecting and meeting and matching and finding, and I guess that goes back to eye contact and enthusiasm and meeting people at, you know, where they are, and empathy and compassion.
Mm-hmm. You know, this issue of loneliness has become such a problematic health determinant that literally some people study loneliness interventions and these certain techniques and the things we can do and employ. And one of them, you want to know this, that has been deployed with great success is teaching people simply to pay compliments. Think about that. Right? Mm. So teaching people to kind of pivot outside of their own self-focus and catch other people doing their best. So learn how to pay a compliment. So what does that mean? That means you're going to have to first notice something worth complimenting, right? So we're going to have to pivot out of our own self-focus for that moment. And so our technology kind of keeps us in that self-focus, that evaluative, envy, comparison place. So my invitation to everyone is to pivot outside of that, focus on other people, catch them doing their best, and celebrate it on purpose.
That goes back to our very first caller and the appreciation that she was expressing and practicing gratitude and appreciation. So we are we're out of time. So any final thoughts? Just a couple seconds.
If you have love in your life right now, if there's people in your home, right, like a family, and you have meaningful friendships, people who show up for you, be grateful. You have what so many people are aching to have. Double down on that life, right? Give more, pay better attention, listen more carefully. If you don't have high-quality friendships and relationships in your life right now, recognize that everything about that can change. Start where you're at. Building relationships is life's work. It never ends. It's an opportunity.
All right. Thanks for joining me today, Dr. Beath. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next week, Line 1 will not air. We'll take a break for President's Day. But the week after, I will return with Dr. David Burns for a discussion about overcoming anxiety and depression. Dr. Burns' book, his pioneering book, Feeling Good, is one of the best-selling books, self-help books of all time, selling over 4 million copies in the U.S. alone. So be sure to tune in for that. Eric Bork handled the web editing for today's program, and Dave Waldron was our audio engineer. For all of us at Line One, thanks for taking the time to join us. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.